Hello and welcome to the Little Minds Big Ideas podcast with the Early Years Network. We are about another Monday rolls around.
Another Monday. Another weekend, as it does.
We've got a bit of an all-over one today, haven't we? We kind of want to reflect on last week, which was Mental Health Awareness Week.
Yes.
Probably last week, honestly.
Well, it is this week. People are listening on Monday.
Why is doing me every time.
Every single time. People are listening in the future.
That blows my mind every time. Yeah. Even though I'm the person who deals with it all and puts it onto Acast and submits it, yeah.
Anyway.
Mental.
So last week for you guys, this week for us, is Mental Health Awareness Week. So we kind of just wanted to do a bit of a summary on that, really, didn't we? With the class that's gone up and our own mental health, how we deal with things, how we can help children deal with things.
And there's like a loose string, isn't there? Mental health is sort of guiding all this together.
Exactly. And then social media is going to come into it as well, because that is massive when it comes to mental health. But to kick us off, we sometimes like to touch upon current news, things that are going on.
Education and the wider world of education.
Educational news. And something that I hadn't really looked at it until Thursday, last week for you guys, when I was listening to Radio 2. And
good old Jeremy Vine.
Jeremy Vine was discussing the ban of sex education for children under 9. Now, this doesn't really go as, they're not as young as early years, but I think some of the topics of the conversation were really, really interesting. And I would love to know what everyone's thoughts are on this, because I can't remember when I learned about sex education.
The class I remember vividly was secondary school. I remember that class.
I definitely remember asking a question about periods in primary school, but I don't know what the context is.
Maybe it sticks out more for girls because...
You learn that.
Can I say that? Is that something you can say? But do you know what I mean? I feel like boys just snigger about it because it's about boobies and vaginas and sex. Like, do you know what I mean? That's why I remember it probably so well in secondary school.
Maybe.
But can you imagine how awful that would be for teachers, having to sit a group of boys down in year 7 and talk about sex?
I find it hilarious.
Maybe we were just immature. Maybe they're better now. Yeah, maybe it's just me.
Children under 9 won't learn about it. Now, I'm not sure that age is currently at. Like, 9 to me does seem quite young. But when you listen to parents on this show, they were talking about how their children at ages of 6 and 7 were asking questions about their bodies and things and all that's going on.
It feels to me like it's weighing up two sides of it. Like, you've got protect their innocence versus...
Educate them
because of the severity... Like, protect their innocence on one side of the spectrum, and on the other side of the spectrum is trying to save them from abuse, neglect, and then be able to verbalise
what is going on. Yes. Now, that is one of the arguments, actually, is that when a child isn't introduced to sex education and doesn't know about consensual sex or rights and wrongs and things like that, that they're more likely to suffer abuse because they don't know that it's not wrong.
Boundaries and neglect.
But then it was the other side of that, actually, like you've said, let children be children, that they don't need to know the ins and outs of it. But then the teacher's arguments of, we're not asking children at the age of 7 to sit down and put condoms on bananas. We're talking about, that's what she said on the radio. We're talking about the body, how puberty changes, menstrual cycles, periods and things like that. And it's more about the biology than let's teach children how to have sex.
What's the difference, like, in the grand scheme of things of children, in terms of understanding words, talking about your foot, your elbow, your penis, your vagina, your toes, your nose? Like, it is just body parts at the end of the day. And as a society, we sort of need to get over the fact of calling it, you hear some weird names in the world.
I've heard so much.
And that, to be honest with you, makes me feel more uncomfortable than talking to a child and saying the word vagina or penis. Like, it's a word, and that's the anatomy that we all have. Let's stop being so strange about it and calling it your fluffy cloud or whatever.
That's a new one. I've not heard that before. Fluffy cloud.
What did you say the other day?
Somewhat like a lot of people say, like, nunny.
The hell's a nunny?
A nunny or...
I thought nunny...
Flower or something like that.
If I heard a child talk about a nunny, I would assume they mean, like, some sort of rag or something they've got.
Yeah.
Or their nanny.
Yeah.
I would never think they're talking about their vagina.
It depends on the context, I suppose.
But do you know what I mean? Like, that's the day. But somebody was saying on Instagram, I think she was a social worker or legal, something to do with that. And she was saying how cases actually, and prosecution fails on wording.
Yeah.
So when he called to a witness stand and terms like nunny are being used, people, offenders are actually getting off as a result of it because yeah. it's not clear or point
what
blank
person
what we're referring to, or the references. Yeah. Like legal jargon gets in the way and suddenly a perpetrator gets off when in reality, if we're using proper words,
yeah.
and the child could say he touched my vagina, then boom, do you know what I mean?
We're out of
sealed and the guy gets put away.
Remember
I say guy,
first,
sorry, person, guy, girl, whatever it might be.
I remember when I first started training and they talked to you about safeguarding and the one of the examples they used for the fact that people teach their children all sorts of weird and wonderful like things for their private parts was a little girl who would tell the educators that with their grown-up, they played with, he had a train and they played with the trains going through the tunnels. Didn't think anything of it because they just... were playing and just talked about trains going through tunnels like you've got toys. But she actually meant that he was using his penis or his hands to...
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
But nobody had picked up on it because of the words that were being used. And they always said, like, you've got to encourage parents to use...
Real
terms, because that's where, like you say, things get lost and people slip through the system. And children continue to be abused when they are trying to tell somebody what's going on, even though they're not sure of it themselves.
It's weird. It's weird how using proper terminology is so jarring. Like,
yeah.
It's weird how that happens. Like, it's weird how there's this stigma across society, whereas if you're a grown man and you refer to a little girl having a vagina or whatever, and you use that terminology around children, that's seen as weird.
Yeah.
Yet creating... strange metaphors.
It's interesting
it's
because
acceptable.
If a little boy was to call their penis their willy, everyone would know what they were talking about. Whereas for a vagina, there isn't a child-friendly term
no,
that could be used. Yeah, it becomes...
Fanny and the P word and things like that. That
exactly.
becomes quite vulgar, yeah.
So there's not actually... That's why for girls, it tends to go down the route of flower, like whatever it might be. But why teaching a child vagina is such a big deal, I don't really know. I remember once one of my colleagues was pregnant and mum had obviously been talking about pregnancy at home, whatever, and the child said to her, the child's going to come out of your vagina. And we were like, yeah, you're right. Like, I'm not going to lie to this child. It's not, got to get out somehow. But she brought the conversation up.
Then we could have gone, you could have started talking to her about what's it called when you... of surgery.
C-section.
Yeah. That was a chance there, Emily, for further learning. And you could have really enhanced that child's pregnancy.
I could have done, yeah, but under nines now, they're not allowed to know. But anyway.
C-section count as the band of
probably. But yeah, I think it's, I just wanted to touch upon it because I want to know everyone's thoughts and opinions on it. I don't have a child.
No.
I don't live with a child full time. So I don't know when they would begin to ask questions. I don't remember myself when you start asking questions about these sorts of things.
Do you think the word sex education is the wrong label?
Yeah.
Because sex education in primary school, to me, I immediately think, well, yeah, I get on board with that. It's a bit weird to be talking sex education because, like, we shouldn't really be teaching primary school children about shagging.
No.
And that's, like, sort of what it sounds like. But in reality, it should surely just be part of the biology.
Human biology should be what it should
be. And we should be making sure there's elements of safeguarding in biology as a part of the curriculum.
Yeah. And then it talks about into secondary schools where they go into the safeguarding side of things like upskirting.
Yep.
And it kind of goes further into consent and things like that, which I understand because teenagers can become sexually active and they need to be in control of their own bodies.
Sex ed, I would assume, has some sort of cyber reference now. Like,
yes.
Because of online. Yeah, I mean, I remember when I was
grooming
in school.
As well is on there, yeah.
I remember when I was in school, there was a whole case of... because when I was growing up, we sort of came with the wave of smartphones and stuff. And when we were in year seven, it sounds so weird, and I'm going to handle it as I wasn't involved in any way, shape, or form. But there was a group of lads in our year, in year seven, eight-ish, who put together what was later dubbed a golden folder, which is basically nude images that they collected
girls
from our year. And there was nothing, it sounds majorly seedy, but it was all somewhat solicited. The fact they shared them was probably not solicited, blah, blah, blah. Anyways, this folder got sort of created in year seven and eight, and it was a collection of, I don't know, probably about 15 to 20 girls
Gosh.
from our year group and stuff. And I think some from the year below and year above, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, this folder resurfaced when we were in, trying to think of the guys involved. Some of them didn't go to sixth form. So when we were in year 11, I think it resurfaced for whatever reason. And obviously the girls are still our age. Year 11, how old are you in year 11? So maybe it was sixth form because of the age thing. Anyway, when it resurfaced, obviously the girls were
underage.
There you go. So even though they're in our year, when the image was taken, they were like 13, 14, whatever it might be.
Wow.
So like, and then it also turned out in the time, over the time being that took place, one of the girls had also left our school and had gone into like, she'd been diagnosed with something. So she was like protected, if that made sense. So it made it even like 10 times even worse because she was classified as vulnerable.
Adult, yeah.
So then the police had to get involved. And the lads involved, luckily, it was just really poor decision makings rather than.
Yeah, okay.
I think the police sort of took it as like, this is really massively serious. But I mean, some of the girls in the folder and the guys were actually like friends in school, like because of the time had gone on and stuff.
It didn't really press
me. It made it more serious because the one individual I mentioned who had then become like, had gone into whatever and made it more serious for vulnerability reasons, etc.
Yeah.
And in the end, they got a really, really, really hard slap on the wrist and weren't put on some sort of sex register, which could have been really, really detrimental for them over stupid
I guess at
mistakes.
The time, they were the same age when it was taken.
Yeah.
The fact that it'd come back, it was, it's not like they'd taken pictures of 13-year-old girls.
So I think yes, obviously, if they'd have been that age, and that then the different kettle of fish. Yeah. So yeah, that was just one of these Elka things that just made me think, you know, cyber and all this understanding is really, really important because you can ruin your life if you send a photo, even if you think at the time.
Yeah.
You've got to be careful what you do out there.
And I think when you put something out on the internet,
never.
A phone or whatever, there forever.
I mean, we're going to talk about social media later, but I just thought it was a...
That was kind of just the current news that I wanted to drip in there for the start of the podcast. Let us know your thoughts.
I mean, from an early years perspective...
We talk about bodies and naming body parts and things and toilet training and safety and... We always talk about with, I know specifically with preschoolers, it's like your body is your body. And at that age, they are curious. They all stand in the bathroom together and they want to, what pants have you got on? Because they want to show off their Disney pants or whatever.
Always reminds me though of Billy Elliot. Like, I'll show you mine.
That was the direct quote. He's like, no, you're all right, thanks.
Not my cup of tea, love. Thank you.
You're all right, see ya. But I think it's interesting because, yeah, at that age in preschool, they are curious, but it's always a reminder of they are yours, they're for you and your safe people and things like that.
But it's strange how, like, in early years, I hope we are using correct terminology around children and helping them and to understand and label, et cetera, et cetera. But it's weird how then they go to school and it's like, oh, actually, teachers, that's illegal. You can't continue.
Can't
so what we're doing is technically, and then when you get to primary school, that's illegal.
Yeah, we can't talk about it until you get nine. Yeah.
Unless they're going to, maybe we'll get something later. But by the way, guys, you can't use these words.
But yes, so that's what I just wanted to put in there. So let us know. Talking point for today was that.
Okay, then mental health.
Yeah, so Mental Health Awareness Week has been going on. I think it's really important to talk about mental health. I think everybody deals with mental health in some aspect, whether they realise it or not.
Yeah.
They deal with mental struggles, might not even be your own, but you with someone or you know someone
colleagues.
Who's going through something. Yeah.
What's your view on awareness weeks as a whole?
I struggle with awareness weeks because I think it's something that should be, it's not, I guess, talked about all the time, this, but it's something that happens every day for everybody. Some people, I don't know what I'm trying to say.
I find it a hard one because it's 50-50 because I think it's great that things get highlighted.
Mm.
But then I also feel like, what, do we just now forget about it for the next 51 weeks of the year?
Yeah, until it comes around next time, yeah.
And it just sometimes it feels a little...
forced.
False as well, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a little like, oh, we're just going to... Like, you see all the big companies doing awareness weeks, we're going to go for walks and stuff, and they go extra effort for mental health. It's like, well, why aren't you doing things... Like, why don't you work hard to find things you can do consistently to help people's mental health rather than just, like, token gestures?
Yeah, I know.
Do you know what I mean? It's like virtuous in a bit, isn't it?
Yeah. But... We wanted to touch on the new class that's on the site. Will it be up by Monday?
It'll be up. It was going to go up today. So today's Friday. So,
yeah.
With the virtual thing that we have a mental health class.
Yes. So the new positive mental health class. And I wanted to call it positive. And we talked about this before I filmed it and the angle that I wanted to take the class in was that I want to, personally, when I think of mental health, I think of the negatives.
Yeah, we fixate on the
doom. Whereas actually, creating a positive mental health was the way I wanted to see it.
It'd be more useful, I suppose.
Yeah, and it's all about helping children to, well, helping us as adults to help children to build a positive mental health. So what can we do to recognise signs and symptoms of positive and negative mental health? What can we do to help the brain to release those positive chemicals? What situations can we help children be a part of? When negative emotions arise, what can we do to support them in co-regulation and things like that? Your class All on Co-regulation is a massive one that supports mental health as well, because when children can understand and recognise emotions and deal with them, quicker, the less toll it's going to have on their mental well-being and things.
Yeah, I mean, even emotions is an interesting one around mental health, isn't it? Because a lot of it comes down to that terminology of emotional granularity, so your ability to describe how you feel in your emotion. Because I saw a study where it suggested like 90-odd% of adults would struggle to explain the difference between anxiety and depression. Yeah. Like, how does it actually make you feel? What do you feel is the difference? And anybody who explains that will always be correct, because it's always individual to how you feel. You can't say to someone, oh, this is how I feel when I'm depressed. But I actually know that's not depression. Out you go. Like, it's not how it works. So it's all about how you, and the language you're able to describe, and also what you link with in terms of your own interception. So like how your body feels.
Yeah.
And also your experiences in life as a concoction will formulate how you can describe depression, anxiety,
or just sadness. Emotions in general. Yeah. And that's what I touch upon in that class, is that actually sometimes a lot of people say we should talk out loud and we should help children to hear different feelings. And I totally agree with that. I don't like to label emotions for children. I don't want to tell someone they feel sad, because like you just said, they might not feel sad. Or is it like, are you feeling sad? Do you feel like, have you got that feeling in your tummy? Do you feel like you want to cry? Like all those different things.
But even interestingly, like if I ask people to describe when you feel like you want to cry, what emotion do you feel?
Oh, all of them for me.
But that's what I mean. Like, it's so like.
Oh, no, just use that as an example.
Last night, I was at the football and I was really like nervous at the beginning, but then I got really emotional, like, because of everything that was going on. And then I was really happy. But all of those could have triggered, like,
they did for
crying. Like, do you know what I mean? Then that's why.
And I was sat at home sending Ben pictures of me crying at the TV, like, oh my God.
But that's why when we talk about emotional fingerprints, in essence, they're not universal. They don't actually exist. Everyone can have their unique individual fingerprints, I suppose. But in the grand scheme of things, and that's why when we use these face cards for children in early years, yeah, it's a great way to teach them the social norms around emotions and the universal sign of happy being the happy face. But that happy face, no one actually, like, if I sat here when I'm happy, went, you would think I'm a psychopath.
It's interesting because with that one, it's always, those emotion cards are really good too, I think, because I do have some in the class, there are downloadables, but I think they're really good. What?
I wasn't.
Don't slate my cards. Thank you very much. I think they're really good when children are up here and they can't pick which emotion they're at. So they're a good visual to be like, okay, well, how would you best describe how you feel? Happy, sad, angry, excited, tired, hungry, like whatever it is. They're a good way to bring them down. But then when you're just having like a discussion on feelings, it's always nice to say, what makes you feel happy? And a lot of the time people will say, like, my family, playing with this person, doing this. And that's a nice way to talk about what makes them feel happy.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It's because words are almost that bridge that give feeling inside your body and your cognitive functioning. Like, it's almost that link.
Yes, yeah.
Like, words act as that link. Like, well, this is how I feel in this scenario. And in the past, my experience is this experience, this experience, this experience. And your body then obviously goes through like a predictive model as your brain, and you figure out within milliseconds
what it is you're feeling. Yeah.
It's the words that then give that freedom.
Well, I had a nursery manager actually who's used the printout cards already, because I have sent them out and tested them on with different settings in different ways.
And little guinea pigs.
Yeah. And she said that they were like, it was really useful because on the cards, there's two or three questions at the bottom to prompt the practitioner to be able to say something in response to that emotion. So if a child is feeling excited, one of the questions is, how can we get that excitement out? Like, what do you want to do? So you could be jumping, you could stomp, you could do star jumps, you could run around. Like, what is it you're going to do? Same with anger. How can we get that anger out of you? Hmm. Or if they said they pick the tired one, one of the cards is, do you feel you need to have a rest? Just because someone feels tired doesn't mean they need to lie down and sleep. That might make them more agitated. But if you're just feeling like, oh, I just feel tired today. Do you know what I mean? So those little questions are a really good prompt for educators to actually reflect on what they're saying to children. And I touched upon this in an Instagram post because our first thing that we say to children with any emotion that they show is, you're okay.
Yeah.
You're okay.
Fine, get on with
it. Then you're fine, get on with it. There was a comment on the TikTok video, I think it was, of that video. And someone said that in their baby room, a lot of the time, the staff would just say, oh, you're just being silly.
But
baby's not being silly.
To be fair to that individual, I think it's something we can all do without even thinking.
We're all guilty of it.
Such a norm, like in society, to tell people or tell ourselves, children. Yeah. You fight, especially for children, because a child's worries, a child's concerns, like things going wrong for them, are incredibly minor in the grand scheme of it normally. But for us, they're minor. For them,
catastrophic. End of the world.
Exactly, yeah. But you got to understand how patronising it is towards children. And they are human beings, and they're, like we always say, learning for experience. So they are constructing their own concept of, and their conceptual framework.
And that's
so if you suddenly start telling them, oh, when you feel like this, which is a level of sadness, or what they equate with sadness,
everyone's going to say you're okay.
Yeah, then you just learn to bottle it up a little bit. When in reality, we don't, the one thing we want to be doing is not teaching children to bottle up their feelings. We want to be encouraging it to be normal to talk about our feelings, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly. And I think that is one thing that I did mention in that video. Have a look back on our social medias because it will be there. And we wouldn't say that to an adult who's just been through something horrific.
No, no.
If someone was having a panic attack, for example, you wouldn't say, you're all right.
Well, any layer of trauma, really, isn't it?
Yeah, and you wouldn't fob them off. No. You might sit them down and say, you are safe, you are with me. We are okay, like in this environment, you talk through it. But we need to give children that same level of respect. And that's what the positive mental health class is all about. It's about recognizing mental health and helping children to build a positive mental health as well. But I think that if you struggle to look after your own mental health, you're going to struggle to help a child with their mental health. And that's huge as well. And all the techniques that are used in that I talk about in the class or anything we talk about on social medias and things can be transferred to adults as well. Yeah. Because we can all do count to five, by finger breathing, whatever it is that you're doing, it can be transferred as adults. We all have our own way of dealing with things. And I sometimes think it's important to talk about your own mental health struggles. Like, I've struggled with my mental health for, I feel like, years and years and years. And I don't always have a hold on it, but I feel like I'm better at recognising than I was like 10 years ago. So I think it's just understanding what works for yourself, and children don't know that yet.
No, because so they haven't developed enough. It's called predictive error, isn't it? Yeah, when you get to it and you're not sure and you make mistakes or you make errors in either judgment or understanding.
But through co-regulation, children will learn what works for them as individuals.
Language and co-regulation in early years can never be
underestimated.
The importance around co-regulation and helping children to develop and through experience, partnering them in that experience. Co-regulation isn't being an emotional bodyguard and playing that game of, oh, you're fine. Like, even if it's coming from a really caring place, that isn't co-regulation. And co-regulation can sometimes be allowing children to experience upset, disappointment, those types of feelings.
Yeah.
Because if you're shadowed away from it, if you're in bubble wrap and you never experience it, you don't learn how to deal with it.
No.
And you don't learn, like I say, those valuable experiences your brain needs later to help it predict and understand what's going on. And then also the prediction of what to do as a response of it. So it is really important it's a hard one to say it's important to let children be upset. There's a fine line.
You have to allow children to feel those emotions. Don't hide them from those emotions.
But then they also need to learn that people who care for them and love them
are there to help them.
That's the crux of it.
And then
we often inevitably can then start talking about from that emotional response, we could start talking about behaviour and you go down that path.
Go that path, yeah. And then when we talk about adults, we wanted to touch upon social media because even though in the early years it's not something that we are, children really should be having access to is social media. Most children know how to swipe notifications away when they're watching something on YouTube. But this one is more for adults in early years. There's so much online, like so much. And I always see videos of like influencers and things that get negative, like it's such horrible, horrible comments on videos. And I do stand with the, yes, you put yourself on social media, like fine, but it doesn't give someone the right to just be nasty.
I always have a thing where if you wouldn't say it and deliver it like that in real life to somebody you were just having a chat with, don't do it on social media.
No.
Because if you're not going to, I mean, some people probably would stand there and do it in real life, but in the grand scheme.
If you came across, like you get quite angry at footballers.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't.
Oh, there's a fine line.
That you wouldn't stand in front of them and call them some of the things that people call them online.
No, and I could say things about my private house, but like, oh, so-and-so's rubbish. But in real life, he's actually really, really good and significantly better than I am and probably a really nice guy. Absolutely.
So I think in terms of social media plays a massive part with mental health. People on social media usually show the good. And I think we're starting to see people show more of the realities of their lives and that not everything is sunshine and rainbows because it's not always.
I think I have said, and people always say this, is a bit of said in every generation, but I do think kids growing up now have it hard.
Oh, I agree. Because
you get it from all angles. Like, you can't escape that feeling of looking at other people. And that is a truth. I mean, you're a teenager, you're incredibly, majority of them are incredibly self-conscious because you go through that phase.
It changes.
And your hormones are so high and the hormone levels are over the place. Like there's a lot going on biologically and it's a tough to deal with. And then having social media as a constant presence, even when you shut your door and you're in your bedroom on your own, it's still there. And like you said, everything on it is...
Everyone's living their best lives.
And now you've got this, you've got trends of obviously girls can always see, you know, girls who look incredible and they don't realise the absolute lengths and hours that they're putting in the gym or like there's always context behind it.
Yeah.
Then you've also got, now you've got this wave of masculinity that's sort of come on. You've got individuals on social media portraying this harsh, stoic version of men in society. And it's just the extremes are everywhere.
Yeah.
Because in reality, people aren't really like that. People battle their emotions and people now say the most ridiculous things and outlandish things just because it gets views and just because it garners attention. And when you're 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, your brain doesn't stop developing until you're, what, 25?
I mean, yeah.
It's a lot. They're so impressionable to what is out there.
I think the term FOMO is so real.
Yeah.
Because if you don't know what FOMO is, fear of missing out.
All right, Emily, trendy little individual.
The lingo. But that is so true. And I think it doesn't stop. There's always, like, I see things on social media and I'm like, oh, I wish I was there. Like, I wish I was doing that. Or if, for example, last August, we were on a lovely family holiday in the sunshine in Turkey. And I missed my friend's birthday celebrations. I missed two celebrations in that week. It was two birthdays, one week, then the next. And I missed both of them. I was having the best time ever on holiday, but I still saw those pictures on social media of all my friends hanging out about me. And I was like, oh, missed it. It doesn't stop.
Yeah.
Even though I am on holiday, drinking cocktails, having beautiful food with the sea and the pool, having the best time of my life, you still get that gut feeling when you see something you're not involved in of, oh, like,
and it extends further than that. I mean, I saw something on social media the other day. It was a chap who was talking about the fact that I think he was 23, some other video, 22, and he has no friends. Or that's what he was talking about anyway.
Yeah.
And I think that can be really hard nowadays because...
Making friends as an adult is so difficult.
And I think making friends in general is really hard now because if you come from school or you move away, you go somewhere else, it's very difficult to make friends unless you're lucky that you've got work colleagues or you happen to find people through something you're interested in, be it sport and stuff. We are living in a world where we're so... self-absorbed probably more than ever, and we're reliant on technology. I mean, you could almost, if you work from home now, you can almost just live your life and never leave your house. You can get shopping delivered to your house, you work from your house, like,
and that's not good for your mental health either.
No, not at all. And the ideas of like community and stuff, like, well, you could almost live in your house now and never talk to your neighbors, and once upon a time you'd know everybody who lives
We don't talk to our neighbours.
Oh, we never talk to the other ones.
I think it's, and that's really important, actually. We talked a long time ago, I can't remember what episode it was, about the fact that we are social beings.
Mm.
Human beings learn through social experiences, and that's what fills our cups up. And that's how we learn through experiences, being sociable. And when you don't have that, oh my gosh, during COVID, there was a point, I remember, I was talking to my mum about this the other day, there was a point where I didn't leave my flat for 5 days. I didn't see a single soul for 5 days, apart from the person I was living with. And she was like, you need to go for a walk. You need to go get some fresh air. But I just couldn't bring myself to do it. I'd got into that rut and I was like, I don't want to leave the house. Yeah. I wasn't scared of COVID. I was just so down. And I got to the point where she ring me like, please go for a walk. Please get out of the house. Sorry. Because you need to do something.
The thing is, though, it was so hard for that, wasn't it?
Lockdown,
and that whole time period. And I still wonder if that has knock-on effects, like long-term knock-on effects. Because think about it, that guy who I was talking about, if he was 22, 23, where, how long ago is lockdown?
It was 18.
So he would have been in around that age. And he would have missed out on so much as a result of it. And I think,
I feel like I'd have missed out on my 18 experiences that have been all right.
No, but there is scientifically, when you talk about motivation, you talk about engagement and stuff like that, we've always had the old intrinsic versus extrinsic motivation. But scientifically, one of the things they are proving more and more is there is a word for it, and I was just trying to find it then, and I can't remember, but it's almost wanting that... praise, let's say.
From other people.
But from a social standpoint.
Yes.
Social praise and being involved in a community and being accepted. Like, they're massive driving factors. Pay is a huge one, of course. But when we're talking about motivation, you label it extrinsic and intrinsic. I mean, it's always all intrinsic. Because even an extrinsic, i.e. an external, and the reason why I'm doing a STEM class currently, which will be probably coming out next week, and motivation's a massive part of that. But when we're talking about even external things, it is an internal drive that's making you want that external thing. Because we often disagree around sticker charts in early years. And I always understand what you mean, because technically that is an external. And the best way to develop motivation is always to have it internally. But even the sticker chart and your want for that object, whatever it might be,
is internal.
Is internal. You're getting a dopamine response.
Yeah.
Which is your brain's...
And I'm not saying sticker charts work for everyone, but they do work for some kids.
No, but that's the thing. But even that, you think of it, oh, a sticker chart, and then you go and you can categorize to forms of motivation. But that sticker is technically, like I've just spoken about, a form of social acceptance.
Yes.
Because the child probably doesn't really give that much of a shit about the sticker, but it's actually...
The praise.
It's that person singling you out and telling you well done.
Yeah.
And then what that sticker represents is, I'm part of this community, society, sort of. That sounds very deep and high level, but... Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
And
that's when that positive mental health gets built, because they've got praise and those chemicals are being released and it's all very nice and positive.
I mean, we can dive into motivation and talk about the different parts of the brain and what releases dopamine.
Yeah.
You can go to that level and then you can talk about extra, like money is another, it's like money is technically the sticker from earlier. The difference is money has a lifestyle reward. It releases things.
The value of it,
but I was looking at a study, it was really interesting, and it actually showed that if you take anxiety versus motivation, anxiety wins. Because they showed in scenarios and through testing, those that had like the most to lose, for example, like the prize money was higher versus lower, the ones actually in the lower band performed best in the tasks.
Yeah.
Because they weren't crippled by anxiety. Again, you can link it back to sport. Often some of the worst performances from some of the best players come at those moments in time where the most pressure is on you. Like, for example, in training, they can nail a penalty like time after time after time. Suddenly, it's the World Cup final. You've got 90,000 people watching you. And my man misses the target completely.
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
But he's gripped with anxiety. Because it outweighs the motivation to win that. He desperately wants that trophy. But anxiety wins over.
Won over it, yeah. And that's why I think, like, in that scenario, I think we were both talking about Saka.
I wasn't, but that was the person who flashed in front of my eyes when I started saying it.
Heartbreak. But the abuse that he got from missing that penalty...
From social media.
I think he was... I'm talking about mental health when it comes into that. Yeah. But that is what we were talking about to begin with.
Yeah, sorry.
He was 19, I think, at the time.
Yeah, but God, it was a long time ago now. I still refer to him as being quite young.
Yeah,
so yeah.
But I think he was 19 at the time, and there's grown adults calling him all sorts of horrific names, and it was awful.
I mean, most of that, though, comes on social media, doesn't it? The faceless.
Oh, 100%, but still, come on. If you're a person that sits behind a screen or a fake account and writes those things to people, I think you really need to go and get yourself some help.
Yeah.
Genuinely, this is from me now, go and talk to someone about your feelings.
Yeah, but
go to therapy. Everyone should do therapy.
They have to do more in social media land. You do.
I don't know how you do more, because you could make up fake different all sorts of everything.
No, but you have to. They are going to at some point have to surely create some sort of ID.
Yeah.
So if you want to sign up to Twitter or whatever the hell it's called now, you have to have it has to be linked to your online ID card.
Maybe. Yeah.
And I know there's a whole people will be able to point out some GDPR flaws. Like, I understand that what I've probably said is quite naive, but there has to be something to govern it. Otherwise, it's just I hate Twitter nowadays, which should be a really nice thing, be able to communicate with people from all over the world on something you're interested in, but it just gets full of absolute shite, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I think today we kind of wanted to touch upon just a nice light chat. We've had quite a few heavy conversations over the last few weeks. We had gender
stereotypes. Nice light chat about down the government for banning sex education. Grab the pitchforks for this nice light topic.
But in terms of the way we've chatted about it, it's quite. We've kept it light and breezy. We had gender stereotypes, and then yourself and Claudio talked about men in childcare, which got quite heavy as well. That was a really, really interesting conversation as well.
Thank you.
So if you've not listened to last week's podcast, check it out. So I just wanted to kind of touch on a heavy topic in a light way. And mental health is real. It's important. And if you're not feeling okay, talk to someone that you trust.
The thing is, there's no way to combat. Like, if you're a parent listening to this, there is no right or wrong way that you can help your child not have demons around social media, demons with the perception of themselves. Yeah. Like, there's no, if you do this, it won't happen. That's not going to occur. And life's tricky, and being a teenager is incredibly tricky. I think the best bet and the best is always just try and raise a child that is proud of who they are, regardless of anything going on. And
what I was always told, if you've not got anything nice to say, don't say it at all.
I think the cool...
smile and walk away.
You're always worried about being the cool kid in school and stuff, and et cetera, et cetera. But being cool is just being nice. And as an adult, you finally get that. I think sometimes you lose that when you're in school. Yeah. But you look back and you think, man, I just could have been solid in myself in being just a nice human
person.
Being.
Yeah,
because that's being cool.
Yeah, I agree. That's a nice way to end this episode.
I feel like I sounded like a dad saying that.
You did. You looked like a dad yesterday when you walked up in your retro lead shirt. Okay, that's us for this week.
Yeah, be nice.
Be nice, be kind.
And look after yourself as well.
Yeah.
Not look after yourself, that sounds like...
Yeah, take care of yourself.
Take care of yourself.
Yeah, I agree. Do something this week that's going to make you feel good.
Yeah. And release some dopamine in your head.
Yes, and we will see you next week.
We'll do. Bye.
Bye.